Good evening, folks. It's your good friend Dan in Little Saigon on June the 19th, 2019. What a wondrous day it is for those of us that live within the Gimbus Grease Zone of yesteryear. We can accumulate the thought process. We know how to communicate with those systems and places that transcend the selfness of the one bullshit. There is a ghostly place beyond this one, called Bellevue. Yeah, anyways, it's fucking A. It's Wednesday. It's hump day, as they say, and I'm here in Little Saigon, Seattle, enjoying a kind of a cloudy night. I don't know what Dane Wigington would say about this cloudy night. I'm not sure I would care. I'm drinking a Wild Side soda I bought from Uncle Ike's. It is blackberry lemonade, and it's filled with electrolytes. It has electrolytes and antioxidants. It has 10 milligrams of CBD and 100 milligrams of the other stuff. And the other stuff is really what gets Uncle Dan turned on. If you can understand that other world, if you can meditate upon it, anyways, so I ordered some food from the Rhine House tonight, and I don't like mentioning places, but crap, I'll just mention it. Screw it. And, you know, normally their food's pretty good, so I don't want to be too mean, but I ordered the pretzels, and they were as expected, so I wasn't underwhelmed or overwhelmed, but I ordered these chicken schnitzel things, and they weren't really very schnitzel. It's like they were more like mangled chunks of chicken meat that was tough, and not at all schnitzly, and you know, a schnitzel is nearly pounded into dust. You know, a schnitzel is basically a chunk of chicken or pork beaten down so horribly by a German millwife. You can see her with her hammer infleciating. Yeah, you can see her infleciating with her millwife hammer, creating the proper destructiveness to the actual meat, thereby tenderizing it. It's why in Indiana they call it a tenderloin. They call it a tenderloin in Indiana because it's supposed to be tender. So that's the thing that they're missing on that tenderloin and/or schnitzel at this place, is that it wasn't really tender. It wasn't really tender at all. Anyways, I don't want to beat up on them because I like the place. They serve good beer, good food. It's rare that bad thing, you know, that, yeah. They're really good. So please take it with a grain of salt. I'm just very picky about my schnitzel. If there isn't some German mill whore named Ingrid beating it to death with a giant titanium hammer, then it's hard for me to understand this being tenderized. Yeah, so anyways, I don't know why I'm fascinated by some of these tones. Yeah, I don't know why. I don't really feel like. Yeah, the timing for my hands is taking a while. The tiny keyboard is doable with my hands, but the timing of being able to do it with my right and my left hand to do these coordinated actions, it's gonna take a while. My left hand, and I won't just blame my left hand, it's a skill. Anyways, I don't expect any of these special effects to sound good. Don't expect any of the special effects to sound good. It's okay if they don't. It's just, this musical background bullshit of life. I was on the bus leaving Willy Wonka's today. There was a young woman. A young woman, I won't say anything more than that, a young woman on the shuttle with me at Willy Wonka's. She was a Smurf. I'm an Oompa Loompa. But I didn't have my Oompa Loompa badge on, so it wasn't obvious. So when I got off at the transit center at Willy Wonka's from the shuttle to get to my bus to go to Seattle, she's saying, "Well, I'm going to Seattle. Where are you going?" I said, "Well, I'm gonna go to the bus over here." And she said, "Oh, is that the one to Capitol Hill?" And she means the special Willy Wonka bus. Okay, so if you're a Smurf at Willy Wonka's, they have magical special buses that will go to specific neighborhoods, like this just amazing fucking setup. Yeah, so they have amazing magical buses for the Smurfs. And she thought I was a Smurf and she thought, "Oh, I would know where the Capitol Hill Smurf bus was." And it's like, "No, I don't. I can't ride those buses because I'm just a contractor. I don't know about those magical buses." I didn't say it that way. I wanted to. I just said, "I can't ride those buses. I'm taking this 545 bus here. You probably want to check someplace else." She seemed very upset by the answer. I wasn't really rude. I just was honest. "I can't help you. I don't take that bus. That's not a special bus for me. That's a special bus for you. That's a special magical bus for you, lady." That's what I wish I would have said. But I didn't say it. I just said, "That's not my bus," in a nice tone of voice. But here's the thing, folks. We live in strange times. There are Gimbus folk that live down by the riverside. Yeah, I don't know about the Gimbus folk. I need to cross off some of these topics. So anyways, I was riding on the bus from, just meeting this woman talking about her need to know about where her special Capitol Hill Smurf bus was, and I was thinking about the way that a lot of the Willy Wonka marketing works for the internal marketing. Okay, so you guys, I don't know how horrified you should be, but if you've ever been in a major corporation, a ton of marketing money, especially for big businesses like Willy Wonka's. a ton of marketing money goes into internal propaganda. This is stuff directed at employees and contractors like myself or Oompa Loompas. And so there's this big push for Pride Month and, you know, Beyond Stonewall and getting people to march together, and that's all fine and good and fine. You all know my opinion about your junk. What you do with it in private is your own fucking business, as long as it's between consenting adults. That's what I think. Don't involve children or animals, and to me, you're fine. You go outside those guidelines, you're probably having problems. But again, I don't know. Let's just leave it at that. But yeah, there's a lot of propaganda resources spent internally to sort of get people to think about things a certain way. And so you'll get stuff on issues of hunger, like, you know, where there's starvation, you know, and you'll get these visualizations of hunger, these ways in which people imagine hunger. You know, all of these 20-something, and a lot of them come from privileged backgrounds, I'll be honest with you. I'm sorry, I know you want to believe that everybody rises up from fucking nothing, but a lot of people who end up at Willy Wonka's as Smurf engineers, they come from decent families who come from decent neighborhoods. And so, how do they visualize hunger? How do they see it? I mean, I know that a lot of you may find this hard to believe, but there were a few weeks last winter where I was kind of hungry. Yeah, I've gained weight since then, and yes, I need to lose weight. But the fact is, I was kind of hungry. I was starved for calories. I was too proud to talk to my sister about food. And I was going to the food bank. And yeah, I didn't have to visualize hunger because I was still in kind of white middle class poverty zone. I wasn't even in the depths of American poverty, let alone world poverty. Like, in terms of the scales of existence, how far you can fall, there's a lot farther I could fall. But at least I can visualize hunger. I can understand it. These frickin' posters, these propaganda posters you'll see showing pictures of people who are hungry. That's not reality. That's not at all. That's the kind of thing that gives people the wrong frickin' idea. Hunger really isn't just something you see, it's something you feel. It's a hollowness. It's a kind of a darkness. In fact, it builds into a kind of darkness. It's a sense that, you know, there's nothing but death ahead. That's what hunger is. Anyways, I don't know why I went off on that tangent, but I think a lot of people are not prepared, folks, for times to come. And yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. I had one topic here based upon a childhood memory. I don't know what I was thinking. No, but now on to something completely relevant and tragically important, because we live in dangerous times. We live in dangerous, mad times. We live in very, very dangerous times, folks. Yeah, we live in dangerous times, folks, and many of us get driven around like we did when we were kids. You remember when you were a kid? You remember when you were a kid, you know, and just a kid, and you had no real problems because you were just a kid? You remember when you were just a kid? Yeah, you remember that. Anyways, remember when you were a kid and maybe you went to Catholic school like I did? And if you were ever, misbehaving on the bus, if you were ever misbehaving on the bus, you would get shown that obligatory, and it wouldn't just be you, okay? No matter who did the misbehaving, the entire class would be shown the obligatory snuff flick of the kids on the bus that act up and cause the driver to drive the bus into a ravine where the bus proceeds to go down the fucking. It's like the snuff flick. It starts out all like. It starts out all nice. Like, it's all like. It's really nice. And it's just a bunch of kids on the bus heading down the road. A bunch of kids heading down the road, no problems. And then all of a sudden, some of the kids, they start acting up. The kids start acting up. They start throwing things, all kinds of crotchety shit. The kids start taking their rotten apples and throwing them at the back of the bus driver. This is very hurtful. They're throwing rotten apples and rotten oranges. They're throwing all kinds of pears, rotten pears, at the back of the bus driver's head. Then some of the kids start dancing some kind of a jig on top of the seats of the bus. The bus driver's going crazy angry now. And this proceeds to get worse, and the kids are screaming and yelling and dancing jigs and tossing rotten fruit at the back of the bus driver's head, and he is convulsing. He probably, keep in mind, this is the 1960s and 70s. He's smoking the Lucky Strike. He's smoking the Lucky Strike. He's smoking the Lucky Strike, and he's drinking his coffee and his whiskey and getting very little exercise that would matter, and he's probably going to have a heart attack. So yeah, this entire thing is terrible. The kids are throwing, he's they're pelting him. They're pelting him with rotten food. And they're dancing jigs on top of the seats, and they're frolicking about and doing all kinds of crazy crap. And the bus driver's heading towards Old Thompson Lane. Old Thompson Lane, Old Thompson Lane. Old Thompson Lane is where old Jim McGee died in 1923. Old Elaine Quatrain died in 45. When she was driving there, they found her barely alive. Yeah, so anyways, that did not go well. But the point is, the bus driver goes down this old lane, and there's a crotchety old bridge that probably could handle the weight and normally does, but the kids are driving him crazy, and he sort of gets a heart attack going, and he spins, and he holds on to the wheel, and it jars the wheel. And the bus gets all cockeyed and crosshaired and mixed up on that bridge. And it goes over the bridge down the side. And it's tumbling down the side. It's like terrible. It keeps falling and. The kids are screaming and yelling. The kids are screaming and. Their heads getting bashed out. The kids' arms and legs are crushed, and their fingers being chopped off by glass and metal being bent and all kinds of broken crap. And the bus is tumbling further down the ravine, and the bus driver has got all kinds of limbs and crap stuck into him. He'll never come back. And the kids are completely smashed to death into a pasty paste down at the back of the bus. And the bus is dead at the bottom of the ravine. And that's it. And that's the picture they would show you if you acted up on the bus. And I make this point, and I make this point precisely because I will be riding with people these days on shuttles and on the metro and in other venues where I feel like they're not really getting it. A, the bus is not a perfect place. The shuttle's not a perfect thing. Uber is way far from perfect, whatever the fuck perfect is. Taxis were never perfect. Trains were never perfect. No form of transportation involving humans or machines built by humans or programmed by humans will ever be perfect. It just is what it is. And I know this is a sad, sad, sad thing to know, because once you know it, you have to accept the fact that you're going to be disappointed periodically. It just is the way it is, okay? But here's the thing. Just because you're disappointed doesn't mean you should bother the driver. You need to leave the driver alone. You really do need to leave the driver alone. You need to leave the driver alone. Don't pester the driver, don't push the driver, don't beat the driver. Leave the driver alone. That's all I ask, is that if you're driving with me in the shuttle or on the bus and you feel the need to be all like type A and to make some special speech to somebody because you think you're special, you're not special. You're just like the other jackals of yesteryear. You stand watch at the corner of the mind's eye, and your bullshit shines more brightly than a hydrogen bomb in a vodka volcano. Yeah, anyways, time to switch topics. Yeah, I was thinking about, like, okay, so you all know about Mary Poppins. And I gotta tell you, Mary Poppins is one of these really difficult characters for me. I don't know a lot about the original story. I mostly know, pretty much know Mary Poppins as, like, Julie fucking Andrews and, you know, the fucking Disney fucking version, I think. But, you know, yeah, I know that, you know, the hot, and I think Julie Andrews was fucking hot, so it's like, you can imagine those dirty, dirty maid fantasies with Mary fucking Mary Poppins. Anyways, but the Mary Poppins character is really strange to me. She just sort of just shows up, she changes everything, she makes everything better, but then she just leaves, and not really with that much fanfare. If we're being honest, I don't know. It's one of those things I've thought about a lot in recent years. Like, I feel like as an engineer sometimes that I'll do a lot of work, get a lot of stuff done, make a lot of positive change, and then get burnt out. And then find myself saying, why am I here? And then all of a sudden, I'm not there any longer. And I know that sounds crazy, but really, for a lot of people who do computer programming, I think that they would understand it. It's like you get burnt out off of the crap. I wish I could tell you otherwise. Anyways, I was thinking about Mary Poppins, and I was thinking about, like, what if there was a hobo version of Mary Poppins called Jimmy Dobbins? And, like, what if I could turn him into, like, you know, a street character of mine. I don't know. Jimmy Dobbins. Jimmy Dobbins would, like, totally rock it. Like, he would be, like... He would rock it out. Like, he would just... I don't know, Jimmy Dobbins. I think that topic is dead. A Mary Poppins hobo would likely get shot on sight. It's like, hi, I'm Jimmy Dobbins, and I'm a hobo, and I want to what? Do what? Hi, I'm Jimmy Dobbins. Let me watch your children. Hi. I'm Jimmy Dobbins, please. Let me watch your children. Hi, I'm Jimmy Dobbins. I'm a hobo, and my teeth are yellow and red and filled with Sklimbi. May I watch your children? Can I watch your children in the night? While you're having drinks with the Lesages or the Halberts out on Fur Island. My name's Jimmy Dobbins. I'm a real good guy. But, you know, ignore the glimbus and his teeth. Ignore it. Ignore the flimby. Ignore the pustules. Ignore the smell. Of course, there'll be a rotten smell with Jimmy Dobbins. No, probably not a rosy smell like with Mary Poppins. Maybe just a really terrible... The smell of a fucking... If you're lucky. If you're lucky. Jimmy Dobbins will smell like a honey bucket in the summertime. That's the best case scenario with the scent coming off Jimmy Dobbins. A honey bucket. Honey bucket... outhouse in the summertime. Or any bucket, but it's gotta be outhouse, gotta be the summertime. There's a certain kind of smell coming off that glimbus juice. It's kind of like, that's the glimbus juice of yesteryear. I don't know, folks. Sometimes I find myself trying to find myself. Yeah, I don't know, man. Jimmy Dobbins is a hobo. Jimmy Dobbins is a hobo. If you allow Jimmy Dobbins to watch your family, you will probably have problems. So don't do it. Don't do it. No Jimmy Dobbins. This next topic, I'm just going to scratch it out. Sometimes I'll put a topic down. I'll write this in my topic book and say I want to do this topic. But this topic is terrible. I do not like this topic. It's terrible. It's too depressing. Huh. I don't even know what this was supposed to mean. You know what? Sometimes I write crap down and I should cross it out immediately because it's just total crap. Ugh. Me and my crap. It's almost like I've gotten caught. Oh, come on. It's almost like I've gotten caught up. Huh, have I talked about this one yet? No, I talked about this. Okay, so I've been thinking, and I think this will be the last topic for tonight's podcast. It's been a little bit of an off and on. Hey, those pauses, I apologize. I know it's painful. I've been thinking off and on about this notion of, well, yeah, of extinction, like the human race becoming extinct. And I know it's kind of a result of listening to Dane Wigington, and it's kind of a result of listening to Guy McPherson as a result of that. I don't think either of them are jokes. Like, I don't think that they're flim-flam people. I could be wrong. I have been wrong about people. And haven't we all? And here's the thing. It's so easy because the internet is really, the internet is just this two-dimensional place. And it's really difficult, unless you can meet people in person, to be certain whether people are real or fake, whether they're bullshit. So, you know, I don't know how much I want to say about this specifically, but what I will say is that I have listened to a lot of these guys' podcasts, and I've been doing a lot of thinking. And one of the things that Guy McPherson mentions, and I feel like I want to research this really quick to get the reference, let's do the citation correctly. Let's do the citation. You always want to get that correct. There we go. Civilization is a heat engine. And I want to get the name of the dude correctly who authored this, or at least the name of the, yeah, Timothy Garrett, University of Utah. So basically, what Timothy Garrett is saying is that no matter what you do, civilization, as it scales up, only produces heat. It is never going to be a thing that's going to, quote-unquote, not result in climate change. I don't know. Some of this seems a little bit, I'm not sure if I agree with that. But here's the one thing I would say. And I do think there's some truth to this. It's hard to know always how this turns out. But what if the real heat engine isn't civilization as much as life itself? And what if it's not as much a heat engine as a kind of slow motion explosion? Now, let me explain what I mean by that. In explosives, there's this notion of high explosives and low explosives. And low explosives are explosives that are essentially the gas expands at a slower rate. But the thing that all explosives have in common, and you could argue that the release of a gas into any area would be the same, but under pressure, has in common, is this immediate process of spreading and diffusion and wanting to fill the space, okay, to fill whatever space you're in. And I've thought about life before. And if you think about life, life has this quality of wanting to fill a space. If there are resources, if there's a means by which life can survive, that life can be nourished, that life has a tendency to want to fill that space. And in a way, that's a lot like, the gas under pressure filling the space. It's a lot like an explosion. You know, what if instead of, civilization being a heat engine and that's the problem, what if life really is a slow motion explosion? That it really is a process by which at the end, you don't reach some, Kurzweilian singularity or Hegelian oneness, but rather a complete entropic dissipation. The complete exhausting of all available resources by life is the secret destiny of all life. And I know that that sounds horrible, because basically what I'm saying is that, and again, folks, I'm a Christian. So right now I'm not wearing my Christian hat. I'm going to discuss the natural scientific world in terms of materialism the way that a lot of people would, when I used to be an atheist hat. I'm wearing that hat. But you really could say to yourself, if you looked at life in a very systems theory, kind of from a systems theory perspective, you could say to yourself that life has the quality of wanting to fill the space and at as fast a rate as possible. So in a sense, it's not just that life is a slow motion explosion. Life is a slow motion explosion that increases its rate over time. So in essence, it goes from slow to medium. So in essence, it probably does end up becoming incredibly rapid right at the end. This is something that, consider, folks, if this is the analogy, if life is really a kind of explosion, and you think about all the rapid technological change, the expansion of population, all the things that have happened in the last 200 years, we really did fill the space fast. Anyways, on that note, consider the possibility that the universe is boundless beyond all measure. It might, in fact, it might be beyond amazing. The universe might expand beyond the realm of any star or solar system you've ever thought about. There might be aliens out there thinking about you, thinking about what you're thinking about. Yeah, anyways, you have a good evening thinking about them aliens thinking about you.